95.3 The Range, Kevin Fowler. Lord loves a drinking man. He just doesn't love a computer that doesn't work right for on the air. Good morning. I'm Chuck Taylor. It is 7:35, and we were going to have him in the 8 o'clock hour, but I am so fortunate that he has come in early. Steve Stoller. And you know him from TV, from the news in the area. He is also now doing, for the city of Plano, he is doing public relations and publicity for them and helped us on the Toyota Texas Music Revolution number 20 last year. He's got a brand new book coming out called Tonight at 10. How you doing, man?
Good morning, Chuck. Well, it's so wonderful.
pull that mic. Come on.
I'm talking into the wrong microphone.
You're used to lavalier mics that somebody controls for you.
It's great being here.
Well, it's good having you, and I know we can't divulge anything, but I'm really excited about Toyota Texas Music Revolution 21 next year. I know you are too.
Absolutely. We've been meeting, we've been planning, and without a doubt, this is going to be the biggest and best Toyota Texas Music Revolution in history.
Yeah, we don't want to spoil anything. We can't say dates. We can't say anything. But it's going to be amazing when it
Absolutely.
Happens.
Absolutely, we got some huge surprises coming up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about the book Tonight at 10. This is, and I love the subtitle of this: a TV news reporter stories behind the stories. Now, I haven't been in. I've only been in the market since 2005, and I didn't know some of your story. And that you're a cancer survivor and everything. And you talk about that very candidly in the book.
Yes. You know, it's funny. I was working out one night, and I took a shower, and I had what I felt like a hard golf ball deep in my armpit.
Yeah.
So I just blew it off because I felt fine. In other words, I thought it was something muscular.
We're guys. We don't go to the doctor, right?
So
manly men.
3 months later, I went to my doctor for a sinus infection. And while I was in there, I was having this internal debate. I wonder if I should show my doctor this thing in my armpit. Finally, I said, "Hey, doc, feel this. What is this?" And as soon as he felt it, his entire personality changed, and I knew that it was something serious.
Oh,
and
wow.
I said, "Well, what do you think it is?" He said, "I could show you medical textbooks. Could be 150 different things. Worst case scenario, lymphoma." I said, "Lymphoma? If it has oma, that means it's cancer."
Right.
He goes, "Well, let's see what it is. I want you to have I want it sonogrammed. I want to have it biopsied, and I'm going to send you to a specialist right now."
Yeah.
So the specialist said, "I want to take that out tomorrow. It's close to your vascular system. We're going to have to put you under." And I said, "Tomorrow? Can't this wait?" And he said, "Yeah, it can wait, Steve, but it's like sitting on a ticking time bomb."
Wow.
So within 24 hours, I was under anesthesia, having my lymph nodes taken out. 24 hours after that, they're telling me I have Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Wow.
And the period of my life, my wife was 8 months pregnant with our second child. You know, you would think it couldn't come at a worse time.
Right.
But actually, everything worked out fine. When the baby was born, the focus was on having the new baby and not my health. So while I was going through this, we had a medical reporter at Channel 4 named John Hammerly. And the day before I went in for surgery, I told him what was going on. And he said, "Steve, we have a unique opportunity here. If this turns out to be cancer, we can follow a cancer patient from the day they're diagnosed all the way through treatment to whatever the outcome was." And I thought to myself, I wonder how many people are out there that have lumps, growths, and they're blowing them off just like I did.
Right.
And I thought, if we have one person who can go to the doctor and find out it's nothing, we've given that person peace of mind. We've accomplished something. And on the other side of the coin, if we encourage someone to go to the doctor and it turns out to be cancer, we may have encouraged them to go in early enough where we can save somebody's life.
Right. And so you become part of the story instead of reporting the story, you are now the story.
That's unusual for a reporter.
Yeah.
It really is. But I really felt like we had a really good mission behind it.
Yeah.
The medical reporter called it the Cancer Chronicles. And they followed me literally from my first chemo treatment. We had the TV camera there when the baby was born, when I had my first radiation treatment, and then something really incredible happened. I started getting these amazing letters from the viewers.
Yeah.
Not just "get well, we're thinking about you," heartfelt letters. Many of them came from cancer survivors. And I'd read these letters, and it would bring tears to my eyes. These people really, really felt something for a total stranger.
And they cared about you.
They really did care.
And you realize at that point how much you become a part of their lives. You know, we in radio, we don't think about that either. You know, we're the media. We don't think that something we say touches people that much.
One letter I got was from a 19-year-old student at the University of North Texas, and she was a Hodgkin's survivor. And she saw the first story where I'm getting my first chemo treatment, and the nurse is explaining all these potential side effects that I can get from these drugs they're giving me. And she said, I saw the story last night, and you really looked gloomy. She said, just know that one day you'll look back at this, and you'll laugh because you'll realize how bad it could have been.
Wow.
Another letter I get has a return address, the Pollage Unit in Palestine, Texas. I don't know what the Pollage Unit is.
Right.
I open a letter and this little piece of paper falls to the ground, like what's inside a fortune cookie. And it says, inspected by Warden 437. So I figure out, of course, it's from a prison.
Right.
So I start reading the letter, and the gentleman who wrote me said he's an inmate at the Pollage Unit in Palestine, not proud of why he's in prison, doesn't want to get into why he's there. But he said he saw the first story, and I was tucking in my little boy, who was 3 at that time, into bed. And he said that, I was so emotionally moved by the story, I want you to know that every day during recreation time, me and 9 other inmates form hands in a prayer circle, and we pray for your health and your family. Wow. And when I read this, I laughed, because I had this image in my mind of these 10 inmates in orange jumpsuits, who knows, in prison for what, praying for me.
Wow.
And the more I thought about it, I really got emotional, and I couldn't believe that so many people were on my side, keeping me in their thoughts and prayers.
Man.
And that is amazing.
And that's just, I mean, you talk about that, but you talk about the other stories behind the stories, because there's a lot of things like the bear falling out of the tree, and your guy, I mean, that's in the very beginning of the book, and your cameraman wanting to move from studio to being out there on the scene.
Right, first day.
First day, and the battery dies while he's doing that, and you don't have that.
You know what, Chuck? I figured out in my 34 years of reporting, I did close to 9,000 stories.
Wow.
And in that time, there's just so many things that happen leading up to what you see on the air that the viewer never sees. So on this particular story, we got a call that there was a bear. It was right between a neighborhood and a golf course, and the bear climbed, a big old black bear,
yeah,
must have weighed 400 pounds, climbs up into a tree, not moving, and it's very close to a neighborhood. So they call out the game wardens, the media comes out, and like you said, my photographer was on the job for the first day. He had been a studio camera operator, so he didn't bring his batteries, of course.
Right.
So the game wardens come, they shoot the bear with a tranquilizer dart. The bear starts getting groggy, you know, it's like first the one paw falls off and he's hanging on by one paw.
Right.
And then he just kind of falls backward 30 feet to the ground with a massive thump. And he had a little cut on his nose, was his only injury after falling 30 feet.
Oh, wow.
But the video was so incredible. I thought, this is going to be an amazing story because we have that money shot of
right.
this bear falling down out of the tree. Get back to the station. The video was, you couldn't even tell what it was. It was so blurry because his battery was running low. And he didn't have a backup battery.
Oh, man.
So we couldn't even use any of the video at all. So the photographer ends up driving way out into the woods of North Carolina to get video of the game wardens releasing the bear, which was good video that no one else had, but still, we missed the money shot.
Right, yeah, and that's just one of the many stories you have. Is there a story that you have in this book that's your favorite?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, doing so many thousands of stories, there is one that stands out. I get a call from a woman in Richardson. And she says, Steve, I don't know if you can help me or not, but my son is dying of cancer, and I'd really like to make his last wish come true. And I said, I didn't know this woman. She just called me out of the blue. I don't know why she even called me. And I said, well, what's his last wish? And she said, well, he's a R&B singer. He plays in a lot of the Dallas clubs. Yeah. He goes by the name of Big Rockin' Daddy. His name was Gary Blakey. And his last wish was to meet his idol, B.B. King.
Oh, wow.
And she told me she arranged the whole thing to take place at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when B.B. was going to be inducted. And when he got there, security didn't know anything about it and wouldn't allow him to go backstage. He was sick. Him and his wife turned around, got in a cab, and went right back to the airport and flew back to Dallas from Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
So she said, is there anything you can do? And I said, well, let me start with the manager. So I called B.B. King's manager, and I said, I don't want to talk about what happened in Cleveland. Is there any way we can make this happen somewhere else? He said, B.B. King is going to be at the Grand Casino and Resort in Gulfport, Mississippi next week. If you can get him there, we'll make it happen. So I called Southwest Airlines. They love the idea. They comped their airfare. Then I called the Grand Resort, and the PR director loved the idea. She said, we're going to give them the weekend of their lives. We're going to comp their room. We're going to give them free meals. We're going to put them on the front row of the concert. We actually rented a van. We flew into New Orleans and drove to Gulfport. So sure enough, the PR director of the Grand met us. They took us into a green room. Gary sits down in a big recliner. B.B. King comes in, and they're having a discussion. And halfway through the discussion, B.B. King says, well, is there anything you'd like me to play tonight? And Gary said, well, my favorite song of yours has always been The Thrill Is Gone. He goes, in fact, my band plays that. I would be so honored if you could play that for me tonight. And B.B. King said, well, we'll see what we can do.
Wow.
So right after that, in the middle of their conversation, Gary turns around, looks me right in the eye, and starts laughing and says, Steve, I can't believe this. I'm sitting here talking to B.B. King like he's my next-door neighbor. And they both had a good laugh. So then we go into the auditorium for the concert. Midway through the show, B.B. King stops, sits on a stool, and says, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest here with us tonight.
Oh.
His name is Gary. Gary's from Dallas, and Gary is sick. He said, Gary, I'm going to tell you something that I've been saying my entire life. And he looks right into his eyes, and he says, ain't nothing over till it's over.
Wow.
And don't you forget that.
Wow.
And then right after that, he goes right into the opening licks of The Thrill Is Gone.
Oh, wow.
And that was my favorite story. And ironically,
that's a great story.
3 weeks after that is when I was diagnosed with cancer. So there's a lot of irony.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, the book is it's a great book. It's a great read. It's a quick read, too. It's
115 pages. You can probably get through it in less than 2 hours.
Exactly. But yeah. but you know what? The stories are what it is. And these are stories that we, you know, people have heard over the years. And then they get to hear the behind the scenes of it. And it's an aspect that they don't normally get from anywhere else. And you know, if you're somebody who's in RTVF, you know, radio, TV, or film, this might be just a little primer that you need to help you know how to become the right kind of reporter, you know, and take yourself out of the story, or in your case, sometimes put yourself into the story.
You know, what's really interesting, Chuck, is in the TV news business, it seems like there's an appreciation for people who are very aggressive and hard-nosed. I'm not like that as a person.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a people person. I really enjoy communicating with people. And that can be a strength, too, as a journalist. Yeah. And I think throughout my 34-year career, I think that managers tended to have this negative view of me for being soft. But in my mind and through my experience, I think soft is equated with being compassionate,
yeah,
and being sensitive. And when you're dealing with people out in the real world, that can be such a strength.
Absolutely.
When you're reporting.
Absolutely.
So that's something that I tried to hold true to throughout my career.
Is this available now, where people get it now?
Yes. I have a website, okay. stevestoler.com. Stoler is S-T-O-L-E-R. And it's also available at Barnes & Noble, bn.com, and amazon.com.
Fantastic. We want people to get it tonight at 10. Steve Stoler, thank you so much for coming in. And I know we're going to be talking soon, probably after the first of the year, about TTMR 21, which is a fantastic event. Of course, we know that because we put it on. We've been doing it for 21 years, and we're excited to work again with the city of Plano on this. I'm going to get to some music and trying to get back on getting this computer again. Steve Stoler, thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Chuck. I really appreciate you having me on.